We eat the cake and move into a sitting room to watch the replay of the opening ceremonies that's being broadcast. A few of the other couples make a nice impression, but none of them can hold a candle to us. Even our own party lets out an ah as they show us coming out of the remake center.
"Whose idea was the hand-holding?"
asks Haymitch.
"Cinna's," says Portia.
"Just the perfect touch of rebellion," says Haymitch. "Very nice."
Rebellion? I had to think about that one a moment. But when I remember the other couples standing stiffly apart, never touching or acknowledging each other, as if their fellow tribute did not exist, as if the games had already begun, I know what Haymitch means. Presenting ourselves not as adversaries, but as friends, has distinguished us as much as the fiery costumes.
"Tomorrow morning is the first training session. Meet me for breakfast and I'll tell you exactly how I want you to play it," says Haymitch to Peeta and me. "Now go get some sleep while the grown-ups talk."
Peeta and I walk together down the corridor to our rooms. When we get to my door, he leans against the frame, not blocking my entrance exactly, but insisting I pay attention to him.
"So, Delly Cartwright. Imagine finding her lookalike here."
He's asking for an explanation, and I'm tempted to give him one. We both know he covered for me. So here I am, in his debt again. If I tell him the truth about the girl, somehow that might even things up. How can it hurt, really? Even if he repeated the story, it couldn't do me much harm. It was just something I witnessed. And he lied as much as I did about Delly Cartwright. I realize I do want to talk to someone about the girl. Someone who might be able to help me figure out her story. Gail would be my first choice, but it's unlikely I'll ever see Gail again. I try to think if telling Peeta could give him any possible advantage over me, but I don't see how. Maybe sharing a confidence will actually make him believe I see him as a friend. Besides, the idea of the girl with her maimed tongue frightens me. She has reminded me why I'm here. Not to model flashy costumes and eat delicacies, but to die a bloody death while the crowds urge on my killer. To tell or not to tell. My brain still feels slow from the wine. I stare down the empty corridor as if the decision lies there. Peeta picks up on my hesitation.
"Have you been on the roof yet?"
I shake my head.
"Cinna showed me. You can practically see the whole city. The wind's a bit loud, though."
I translate this into, "No one will overhear us talking," in my head. You do have the sense that we might be under surveillance here. "Can we just go up?"
"Sure, come on," says Peeta.
I follow him to a flight of stairs that lead to the roof. There's a small dome-shaped room with a door to the outside. As we step into the cool, windy evening air, I catch my breath at the view. The Capitol twinkles like a vast field of fireflies. Electricity in District 12 comes and goes. Usually, we only have it a few hours a day. Often, the evenings are spent in candlelight. The only time you can count on it is when they're airing the games or some important government message on television that it's mandatory to watch. But here, there would be no shortage. Ever. Peeta and I walk to a railing at the edge of the roof. I look straight down the side of the building to the street, which is buzzing with people. You can hear their cars, an occasional shout, and a strange metallic tinkling. In District 12, we'd all be thinking about bed right now.
I asked Cinna why they let us up here.
"Weren't they worried that some of the tributes might decide to jump right over the side?" says Peeta.
"What'd he say?" I ask.
"You can't," says Peeta.
He holds out his hand into seemingly empty space. There's a sharp zap, and he jerks it back.
"Some kind of electric field throws you back on the roof."
"Always worried about our safety," I say. Even though Cinna has shown Peeta the roof, I wonder if we're supposed to be up here now, so late and alone. I've never seen tributes on the training center roof before, but that doesn't mean we're not being taped. Do you think they're watching us now?
Maybe, he admits. Come see the garden.
On the other side of the dome, they've built a garden with flower beds and potted trees. From the branches hang hundreds of wind chimes, which account for the tinkling I heard. Here in the garden, on this windy night, it's enough to drown out two people who are trying not to be heard. Peeta looks at me expectantly. I pretend to examine a blossom. We were hunting in the woods one day, hidden, waiting for game, I whisper. You and your father? He whispers back. No, my friend, Gail. Suddenly, all the birds stopped singing at once, except one, as if it were giving a warning call. And then we saw her. I'm sure it was the same girl. A boy was with her. Their clothes were tattered. They had dark circles under their eyes from no sleep. They were running as if their lives depended on it, I say. For a moment, I'm silent, as I remember how the sight of this strange pair, clearly not from District 12, fleeing through the woods, immobilized us. Later, we wondered if we could have helped them escape. Perhaps we might have concealed them, if we'd moved quickly. Gail and I were taken by surprise, yes, but we're both hunters. We know how animals look at bay. We knew the pair was in trouble as soon as we saw them. But we only watched. The hovercraft appeared out of nowhere, I continue to Peeta. I mean, one moment the sky was empty and the next it was there. It didn't make a sound, but they saw it. A net dropped down on the girl and carried her up fast, so fast like the elevator. They shot some sort of spear through the boy. It was attached to a cable and they hauled him up as well. But I'm certain he was dead. We heard the girl scream once, the boy's name, I think. Then it was gone. The hovercraft vanished into thin air, and the birds began to sing again, as if nothing had happened. Did they see you? Peeta asked. I don't know. We were under a shelf of rock, I reply. But I do know. There was a moment after the bird call, but before the hovercraft where the girl had seen us. She'd locked eyes with me and called out for help. But neither Gail or I had responded. You're shivering, says Peeta. The wind and the story have blown all the warmth from my body. The girl's scream. Had it been her last? Peeta takes off his jacket and wraps it around my shoulders. I start to take a step back, but then I let him, deciding for a moment to accept both his jacket and his kindness. A friend would do that, right? They were from here, he asks, and he secures a button at my neck. I nod. They'd had that capital look about them, the boy and the girl. Where do you suppose they were going? He asks. I don't know that, I say. District 12 is pretty much the end of the line. Beyond us, there's only wilderness. If you don't count the ruins of District 13 that still smolder from the toxic bombs. They show it on television occasionally just to remind us. Or why they would leave here. Haymitch had called the Avoxes traitors. Against what? It could only be the capital. But they had everything here, no cause to rebel. I'd leave here, Peeta blurts out. Then he looks around nervously. It was loud enough to hear above the chimes. He laughs. I'd go home now if they let me, but you have to admit the food's prime. He's covered again. If that's all you'd heard, it would just sound like the words of a scared tribute, not someone contemplating the unquestionable goodness of the capital. It's getting chilly. We better go in, he says. Inside the dome, it's warm and bright. His tone is conversational. Your friend Gail, he's the one who took your sister away at the reaping. Yes. Do you know him? I ask. Not really. I hear the girls talk about him a lot. I thought he was your cousin or something. You favor each other, he says. No, we're not related, I say. Peeta nods, unreadable. Did he come to say goodbye to you? Yes, I say, observing him carefully. So did your father. He brought me cookies. P Peeta raises his eyebrows as if this is news. But after watching him lie so smoothly, I don't give this much weight.
Really? Well, he likes you and your sister. I think he wishes he had a daughter instead of a house full of boys.